All right. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here. Okay, let's start with a little bit about where I'm from. I'm from the National University of Singapore, the Department of Building, and I'm also leading the Smart Materials Lab. So let me get this to work right here. So we are a pretty small setup, but for the past few years we have been trying to, and it seems that we have been quite successful in establishing network and collaboration around the world. Quite recently, I was in at the Ithaca Institute, spent 2 days there, talked to Hans Peter. And right now, we are working on a few projects together, including the EM wave, electromagnetic wave shielding effect of the different types of biochar. And just yesterday, I was at Berkeley, in which I presented something on the use of biochar as building materials. So that is basically what we do in NUS, focusing on using biochar for different types of building material, and of course mixing that with different kinds of concrete admixture. But because of the time constraint today, sad to say that I will not be able to talk too much about the kind of results that I have, although I'm just going to share with you some of the main points. The focus for my talk today is on Project Carbon Symbiosis, which is something that I started not too long ago. And you will see in a few minutes that it does have the component of biochar building material in it. So everything started with this idea, and that is to address three challenges in an integrated manner using what we call a mediator. And in this case, the mediator happens to be biochar. So these three challenges are all written here, and I think the best way for me to show them or to explain them is to show you an animated, this is not working too well, but anyway, I'll try my best. Okay, seems to be working now. So this is how the story goes. First of all, we have water hyacinth. We are in Florida, and of course, it's quite well known that water hyacinth is a kind of weed. Grows very fast, and it can cause quite a menace in waterways. So I'm going to put them in a special kind of hydrophobic, or rather hydroponic, greenhouse. We call them green chimney. And into these greenhouses, I'm going to pump in CO2, or just flue gases from generator. And right after that, I'm going to take them out and change them into, or convert them into biochar. So what am I going to do with biochar? Two ways, right? The first method is to basically test the biochar extensively for its carbon adsorption capability. And then to make use of that knowledge to come and design different types of building materials. And in a little while, I'm going to talk about how we can make use of that knowledge to come up with different ideas of building materials, of applying biochar as a building material. And of course, something which I believe most of you are already familiar with, and that is to make use of biochar to enhance, if possible, urban farming and urban agriculture. So let me start by introducing the concept of green chimney. The concept of green chimney can be understood only if we differentiate between the passive and active carbon sequestration or carbon capture sequestration. So these are some of the statistics that we have got so far about how much of the CO2 emitted into the atmosphere that land plants can remove. But that kind of CCS can also be understood as the passive mode of CCS. It's amazing, actually, that we have researchers who have gone through the trouble to find out how much different types of trees, when fully grown and mature, can remove using this passive mode. Comparatively, I find that not much attention has been put into studying the more active mode of CCS. And even if it is done, you'll find that most of the study was on algae bioreactors. Comparatively, not much or not many studies have been completed on land or using land plants or studying land plants in such bioreactors. So this is how it works. And it actually comes about when we visited a few reforestation sites in our region. We find that in many of these sites, and I'm not too sure whether they've actually done this correctly, there's always a lag time or a delay, and during which they are basically waiting for samplings to grow strong enough, big enough, and resilient enough in order to be deployed on the ground. And we find that that is the time window where we can actually do something about. And how about erecting a greenhouse? And into the greenhouse, we are going to pump CO2 or flue gas from a nearby source, or even look for a way of, well, collecting this flue gas, drive them on site and dump them into the greenhouse. And in the greenhouse, we have standing plants. And basically, the whole idea is this, right? We have a greenhouse, and inside the greenhouse, we have a standing plant. We pump in the CO2, fill it up, seal it up, and then let things happen. We have done a few of these studies, lab-based study, on the rooftop of my block in a university, and this is how it looks like. And of course, from another angle. And in one or in each of these tanks, we have plants like this. So in this case, we have water hyacinth used as a standing plant. So I'm not going to go into details. The results of what we call an active hydroponic greenhouse system, in this case, basically the green chimney system, has been published last year in the Journal of Cleaner Production. So basically what we found is that you get graphs like this, right? Every time you pump in, and if you wait long enough, of course the CO2 concentration in the tank will drop. And right after that, you pump it up again, and so on. And over a period of time, you can then figure out how much CO2 has been removed by the standing plants using the active mode of CCS. Furthermore, and this is even more interesting, is that you get a graph like this, in which you basically compare the y-axis, or the value of the y-axis, which is your carbon sequestration efficiency, okay, of the greenhouse due to the standing plants, with these horizontal lines. And every horizontal line represents the sequestration efficiency of the plants that was, or the trees, the species of the trees that was studied before. And in the earlier slides, I've shown you some examples of these 44 species. And what this graph actually shows is that for every value of the efficiency of this hypothetical green chimney, you can actually find out that, you know, if it is deployed on the ground, it can help to remove as much CO2 using the active mode as some of the fully grown trees occupying the same land area using the passive mode of CCS. So this is something that we find very interesting, and of course we are looking for opportunity to really put this in practice on the ground. However, every time I present these results, I always get these two questions. So what? You know, why do you actually make use of mung beans? Well, that's because in the original green chimney study, we make use of mung beans rather than water hyacinth as a standing plant. You know, can you actually make use of wheat rather than a food plant to do the job? The answer is yes. And the second question is that how are you going to, or what are you going to do with the plants after they have been basically jam-packed with CO2? Well, the answer now is even more obvious, and that is to turn them into biochar. So that leads us to the second step, which is to basically replace mung beans with water hyacinth. And the table here basically shows you the amount of CO2 that the standing plants, in this case water hyacinth, can remove. And these poor guys, this is how they appear after about 17 days of non-stop CO2 dosage. We turn them into biochar, measure the CO2 absorption capacity. And this is something that I really want to show you. And up till now, we still do not know for sure what's the answer. So you have two bars over here in this graph, the green and the yellow. The green one basically represents the CO2 concentration, or rather the amount of CO2 that can be absorbed by biochar made from water hyacinth that is basically jam-packed with CO2 or dosed with CO2. And you find that that amount is significantly higher than the biochar made from water hyacinth which is not dosed with CO2. So initially we find that maybe there is a difference in the physical properties, but when we take a look under the SEM, it seems that the pore structure, even after we have done the BET analysis, seems to be almost the same. So it has got to do with some chemistry or difference in the chemistry, maybe functional groups due to the process of CO2 dosage, and that analysis is still a work in progress. So basically, we have done this kind of study, and right now we are trying to see how we can make use of that knowledge to help us design different types of building materials. And due to time constraint, I'm just going to show you some of the results that we have gotten so far. Okay, right here, we have 4 clusters of bars. Okay, the first two are, of course, the controls, and of course, the last two, they represent concrete mixture containing saturated biochar and unsaturated biochar. What do I mean by that? When biochar is saturated, it means that before I put the biochar into the concrete mixture, I actually jam-packed it or dosed it with CO2. And of course, in the case of unsaturated biochar, we do not do so. All right? So we skip that process. So from here, it's quite clear that in a case of mixture containing unsaturated biochar, the strength increases. And the reason is that because of the sheer size of the biochar, it actually provides what we call the microfiller effect in order to reduce the overall porosity of the concrete. And that is supported with these clusters, with this cluster of bars. Now what this shows is that the water penetration or the depth of water penetration of concrete mixture containing unsaturated biochar is the least for the same reason of the microfiller effect. And there's another reason for that, and that is actually shown here, which is the promotion of local cement hydration process, which makes the overall porosity of the concrete even lower compared to the rest. And that is shown in the lower value of the water penetration. So finally, we are very curious to see whether these different types of biochar produced from water hyacinth can actually help us to understand a little bit more about its effectiveness in promoting urban farming. So for that, we produce 4 different combinations of biochar. So starting from the top, you have water hyacinth, which is either dosed with CO2 or not. And after we have converted the water hyacinth into biochar, we can split them into 2 groups. The first group being the biochar that is further dosed with CO2. And of course, the second group, biochar that is not further dosed with CO2. And that's how you get these 4 combinations, right? Okay, so what's the results? Well, the first batch of results are out, and we tried on mung beans with this particular mix ratio. And this is what we found. Nothing new here. In fact, it does show that biochar made from dosed water hyacinth seems to be able to really reduce CO2 at a faster rate. Faster rate, and of course, larger magnitude compared to the blue line, okay, the blue curve, which is basically biochar made from water hyacinth that is not dosed with CO2. What we found is that regardless of how you have introduced the CO2, either at the feedstock stage or at the biochar stage, the pH is not going to show any difference. All right, maybe just plus minus 0.1. And is that going to do any good in terms of promoting the growth of mung beans? No. In fact, the germination is even terminated. No. And the best growth we found is with the soil. So So right now, what we have done is that instead of looking at mung beans, we have actually turned our attention to growing lettuce. And this is what we found. All right. Using biochar that is not dosed with CO2, we are able to get better growth than if we are to use biochar containing or pre-dosed with CO2. So it seems that pre-dosing either the biochar or the feedstock, in this case water hyacinth, with CO2 produces mixed results. In conclusion, and I think I'm ahead of time, right? There are 3 points that I would like to reiterate from my pretty short presentation today. And that is, when we use the concept of green chimney, we find that those water hyacinth can produce biochar with higher CCS capability. And I think this is something that is worth further exploration. Secondly, ongoing efforts to apply this style of biochar in buildings to control indoor CO2 level should produce some interesting results. And of course, finally, from our not very successful effort to apply biochar from water hyacinth for urban farming, we find that CO2 saturation or CO2 dosage at a feedstock or biochar stage did not really produce significant difference in pH level. And of course, it does not seem to really promote the growth of some kind of plants. Okay, plants that, well, make sense to us in Asia to grow, including mung beans and lettuce.